This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents Living with a SEAL, 31 days training with the toughest man on the planet. Written and read by Jesse Itzler.
This book is dedicated to my mom and dad, who've been at every game, every event, and every big moment in my life. Also to my wife, who continues to teach me about unwavering support and love. Plus, she has the patience to put up with me. Disclaimer. The events of this book have been recreated from memory, and in some cases have been compressed to convey the substance of what occurred or was said. I tried to keep the time sequence of my experiences in order, but it's possible that events occurred either earlier or later in reality than they do in this story. Although every workout written is true and happened, it's important to note, I'm not recommending you do or try any of the workouts in this book. First off, I don't want anyone to get hurt. Second, who wants to get sued? Like any activity involving speed, equipment, endurance, and environmental factors, the workouts described in Living with a SEAL pose some very serious risks. All readers should take full responsibility for their safety and know their limits. As a trainer, SEAL knew his stuff, and he factored into every single one of his workouts my level of experience, aptitude, training, and how much I could handle. I kept a detailed diary during my time living with SEAL, which instantly became a blog. It was primarily for friends and family, but as the insanity of my workouts grew, so did my audience. The result is this book. You will notice as this book goes on that the person with whom I trained is referred to only as SEAL. He asked that I not disclose his name, and he didn't say please. Introduction. People ask me why I hired SEAL. One answer is this. When it comes to physical fitness, I tend to be a creature of habit. I guess compared to most people my age, I was in excellent shape and in a great place in my personal life. At the time, I was married, still am, to a fantastic woman, and we had our first beautiful 18-month-old son, two more since. I began running in 1992, just after I graduated from college. I've missed maybe a handful of days since. I've run 18 New York City marathons in a row, and it's been the same drill every year. Training schedule, the same. Running route, the same. The store I buy bananas from the day before the race, the same. The Patsy's pizza I order the night before each race, the same. I like routine. And routine can be good, especially when it comes to working out. But routine can also be a rut. Most of us live our lives on autopilot. We do the same thing every day. Wake up, go to work, come home, have dinner, repeat. I found myself drifting in that direction. It was as if my cruise control settings had been set and I wasn't improving. I wanted to get off it. I wanted to shake things up in a big way. My Central Park West life and SEAL's nomadic, take-no-prisoners life merging, or should I say colliding, for a period of time was what I needed. It was unexpected. It was unique. It was insane. Okay, I admit it, but research shows that stepping out of our routine in life is great for the body and spirit. The brain too. Mix it up. Do the outrageous. Think out of the box. Life is short. Why not? As SEAL says, this ain't a dress rehearsal, bitch. While this is a story about our month together, it's just as much a story about two people that had to step outside of their comfort zones, SEAL and me. He was as uncomfortable with doormen, chefs, and drivers as I was with sleeping in a chair and intentionally waking up in the middle of the night to run in the worst possible conditions. His no rhyme or reason approach to our workout schedule actually brought a lot of clarity into my life. SEAL had something I wanted, but I just wasn't sure what it was, and I wanted to find out. Do you remember Mr. Miyagi from The Karate Kid? He had a very unorthodox approach to training. Daniel LaRusso, played by Ralph Macchio, wants to learn martial arts, but Mr. Miyagi starts him off with menial chores to help him. And Daniel unknowingly develops the defensive blocks through muscle memory, but what he eventually learns is a lot more than martial arts. That's kind of what I was looking for when I asked SEAL to move in and train me. I wanted to train my body, but also my mind and spirit. The difference was I wasn't training for protection or a trophy, and I had already gotten the girl. I just wanted to get better. I've always had an unorthodox approach to business and life in general. It served me well. I don't believe in resumes in the traditional sense. I believe in life resumes. Do more. Create memories. Only when looking back on my successes and failures am I able to connect the dots. I could have never predicted or planned to go from being a rapper on MTV in the 1990s to eventually owning and operating my own private jet company. My normal has always been abnormal. I don't know if I was thinking about my mortality or fretting over how many more peak years I had left or anything like that. I just felt that now is as good a time as any to shake things up. You know, break up that same routine. I believe the best ideas are the ones you don't spend too much time thinking through. My time with Seal was no different, and I got a lot more than I bargained for. Most of my successes in life have come from learning how to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. Like I said, I just want to get better. Every day, do something that makes you uncomfortable. Seal. Prologue. Seal moved into my house to train me in December 2010. That winter went on to be one of the snowiest on record. Airports closed, trains were delayed, a nor'easter dropped more than 20 inches of snow on New York City in one day. The winds were so strong they pushed the falling snow into drifts that measured up to 4 feet. City bus drivers abandoned their vehicles in the middle of the streets. So did regular drivers. Plows couldn't remove the snow for days. I was sure my mission with Seal would be compromised. But that was before I knew him. Day one, the arrival. I'm trained to disappear. Seal. New York City, 14 degrees, 0638. I pour oatmeal into a bowl, fill the pot with water, light the stove, and set the timer. I click play on the remote and position Laser, my 18-month-old son, so he can see his Baby Einstein video. I peek into the guest room to make sure the bed is made. My son is giggling, which comforts me. I check on my wife, Sarah, who's still sleeping, and then recheck the guest room to make sure it's shipshape, or whatever the heck they say in the Navy. I hear the timer go off. I cut up some bananas and pour honey on them. I look at the clock on the microwave, 6:38 a.m. ETA, 22 minutes. I'm filled with nervous energy. I sit with my son, feed him breakfast, and watch the rest of Baby Einstein. The bananas are still in my bowl. I'm not hungry. I go into the bathroom and look at myself in the mirror. I push my hair back with my hands. I grin at my reflection to check my teeth. They're clean. I go back into the living room. I do as many push-ups as I can. 22. I look at the clock. 6:44 a.m. What if he has trouble getting a cab? Does a guy like this even take a cab? Maybe he's going to run to my house. The plane might be delayed. He could have changed his mind. Maybe I should call. What am I talking about? The guy's probably parachuted into foreign countries. He has to know how to get to my house on time, right? But he never asked for my address, never inquired what to bring. He wouldn't give me his flight information and didn't request a car service. Nothing. In fact, the only thing the man said was, I arrive at 0700. That's military time for 7 a.m. I first saw Seal at a 24-hour relay race in San Diego. After several marathons, this was my first ultra. I was on a team of 6 ultra-marathoners who would each take turns running 20-minute legs. The objective? Run more miles than every other team in 24 hours. There were teams registered from all over the country. You know, friends coming together to test themselves physically and mentally. Seal, however, didn't have a team. He didn't have friends. He was running the entire race himself. The event was low budget, really low budget. The entire course was set around a 1-mile loop in an unlit parking lot near the San Diego Zoo. It was unsupported, meaning you bring your own supplies. Whatever you needed, you were responsible for. My team and I flew in the night before to get ready. When we got there, we walked the course and mapped out our strategy. Before we went to sleep, we laid out our race gear and supplies so we were ready to go when we woke up. Water, Gatorade, bananas, power bars, Band-Aids, we were ready. Before the race, we stretched in a small circle on the grass. I was nervous and excited, but I couldn't help notice the guy 10 feet away. To say he stood out would be an understatement. For starters, he was the only African-American in the race. Secondly, he weighed over 260 pounds, whereas most of the other runners weighed between 140 and 165 pounds. Third, whereas everyone else was talkative and friendly, this guy seemed pissed. I mean, he looked very angry. He just sat there all by himself in a folding chair with his arms crossed waiting for the race to start. No stretching, no prep, no fancy shoes, and no teammates. No smiling. He just sat quietly with a don't fuck with me expression on his face. His supplies for the 24-hour race? One box of crackers and water. That's it. He laid them out next to his chair. The guy was a cross between a gladiator and the G.I. Joe action hero my son has, but life-size. He looked indestructible, battle-tested, dangerous, alone, determined. Even the way he spit was scary. If he hit you with it, it likely would leave a scar. He was intimidating. Physically, the man looked like someone sprayed muscle paint all over his body. Ripped, flawless. Once the race started, in between our individual legs of running, we stretched and stayed hydrated to avoid injury and applied plenty of Vaseline. As a friend of mine likes to say, brother, ultras are chafy. But as the race continued and I cheered on my teammates, I couldn't help but keep tabs on the guy who was running alone. Who was this guy? There was magnetism to his fury. Underneath his scowl, I sensed something I couldn't quite put my finger on. Maybe it was a sense of honor or integrity or purpose. Yeah, that's it. He ran with a sense of purpose that I couldn't quite comprehend. He ran as though lives depended on it, like he was running into a burning house to save someone, a kitten, or an old woman. With each stride he took, it seemed like he was creating mini earthquakes beneath his feet. But at all times, his form was perfect. His eyes locked in a stare, a focus that was diamond tip precise. He just ran, checked his splits on his watch, and ran for 100 miles straight. When the 24-hour race was over, I was cooked. My thighs were so tight, I could barely walk a yard. As my teammates and I slowly gathered our sneakers, lawn chairs, and personal belongings, I noticed him again, this massive 200-plus-pound block of carbon steel, being helped to the parking lot by a woman, whom I would later find out was his wife, looking like he just survived a plane crash. I concluded two things. One, I'd never seen anyone like this. And two, I had to meet him. Back home, after some investigating and some Googling, I was able to ascertain a few pertinent things about him, including the fact that he was a Navy SEAL, a highly decorated Navy SEAL at that. Then I tracked down a contact number and I called him cold. He was on the West Coast. This is a habit I have. When I see or read about someone interesting, I call them up and basically ask them to be my friend. My wife says it reminds her of middle school when you hand someone a note and ask, "Do you want to be my friend? Check yes or no." Well, I guess I never outgrew that phase. "Yeah," he answered. "Is this SEAL?" "That depends on who's asking," he said. I hadn't experienced these kind of nerves since I called Sue my senior year in high school to ask her to the prom. I started talking about the race and babbling on until halfway through my rap, I realized that I sounded like someone I would have hung up on. In fact, I wasn't completely sure he hadn't hung up. There was dead silence coming from his end of the phone. This was way worse than the call to Sue. "Hello?" I asked. "Yeah?" "Just give me 15 minutes to propose something to you in person," I said finally. "I'm in New York City but can fly out tomorrow." Silence. "Hello?" Silence. "Seal?" Silence. Finally, "You want to come out? It's on you," he said. 24 hours later, I was in California. We met in a local restaurant in San Diego. After some small talk, which consisted of me talking and him saying nothing in response, I asked him to move into my house to train me. He stared at me with cold, flat eyes. I couldn't tell if he thought I was nuts or if he was figuring out if I was worth his time. He was sizing me up. 1 minute passed, then another. "Okay, I'll do it with one condition," he said, in a tone that was slightly motivational in a psychopathic drill sergeant way. "You do everything I say." "Yes?" "And that means everything." "Okay, I can wake you up at any time. I can push you to any extreme. Nothing is off limits. Nothing. Well, by the time we're done, you'll be able to do 1,000 push-ups in one day. 1,000? This wasn't going to be anything like the prom, I thought. At exactly 7 a.m., there's a knock on my door. He has no luggage, no suitcases, no expression. In spite of the fact that it's December and it's freezing out, he's wearing no coat, no hat, no gloves. There's no greeting. He simply says, "You ready?" That's it? No warm-up pitch? No nice to see you again? No, it's cold out, huh? Maybe something nice and easy right down the middle. Instead, I get a Mariano Rivera cut fastball. "I'm so glad you're here," I say. "Anything you need, please feel free to help yourself. Make yourself at home. Our home is your home." "Nah, bro. Not at all. This is your home. I don't have a home." I laugh. Seal doesn't laugh. "It was only an expression," I answer. "Make yourself at home, that's an expression." "I don't operate in expressions, dude. I operate in actions. That needs to be clear immediately," he says. "Understand?" "Okay." "Huh? Yes, sir?" "I'm trained to disappear. You don't ever even know when I'm here." "Okay. All right, let's get into this shit. Meet me here in 9 minutes. And don't bring your cow fuck expressions." Cow fuck? I change into my standard cold weather workout gear, which consists of 2 sweatshirts, 2 hats, and gloves. I walk back out to the front door where Seal is already standing, looking at his watch. It's 14 degrees out and nippy. He's wearing shorts, a t-shirt, and a knit hat. Nothing else. "Man, I may need to borrow some gloves," says Seal. "You may need gloves? Yeah, or some kind of mittens or some shit like that." "That's it? Only gloves?" "That's it. It's 14 degrees outside," I say. "To you it's 14 degrees because you're telling yourself it's 14 degrees. "No, it really is. It's 14 degrees. Like that's the real actual temperature outside. It says so on my computer." Seal pauses for a minute like I may have disappointed him. "On your computer, huh?" He begins to laugh, but it's a haunting laugh like the count on Sesame Street. "The temperature is what you think it is, bro, not what your computer thinks it is. If you think it's 14 degrees outside, then it's 14 degrees. Personally, I'm looking at it like it's in the mid-50s. Rather than argue, after all, we're just getting to know each other, I say, "Got it." "You ever spend time in freezing water, Jesse?" Seal asks. I'm thinking to myself, like, on purpose? But I respond with a, "No." "Well, is it freezing? Or is your mind just saying it's freezing? Which is it?" He laughs again. "Control your mind, Jesse." "Got it. I'm gonna have to put that on the to-do list. Control mind." "Exactly. Enjoy this shit. If you wanted to be 70 and sunny, it's 70 and sunny. Just run. The elements are in your mind. I don't ever check the temperature when I run. Who gives a fuck what the temperature on the computer says?" "The computer isn't out there running, is it?" He's got me there. But instead of saying "got it" again, I try to keep the banter going. "Does that work the same in heat? I mean, if it's 95 degrees outside, can you make it snow in your mind?" "Nah, man. It's a one-way system, bro. Cold to hot only. When it's hot outside, it's just fucking hot." If one of my friends tried to give me the same logic, I'd laugh. But coming from Seal's mouth, I almost believe him. However, I can feel the draft coming from our windows, and I don't care what Seal says. It really is 14 degrees outside. "Well then, what's the strategy in the heat?" "In extreme heat, it's a totally different mindset, bro. You gotta get medieval, embrace it, grind it out. Think about how others are suffering. Enjoy the pain." "Yours or theirs?" I ask. Seal levels me with his stare. "Both," he says. Then Seal nods at me, the signal that it's go time. We head to Central Park and run 6 miles at a 9-minute, 20-second per mile pace. I think Seal wants to feel me out. Although I'm an experienced marathoner, I was never a fast runner. I can run at a 7-minute mile pace, but I prefer not to. I like to take my time running. My pace is more the you should be able to talk to a friend while running pace. It's more enjoyable. I'm way more of an endurance guy than a sprint guy. I find that endurance running is more of a mental challenge than a physical challenge, and I'm pretty good at blocking out the pain and boredom of long runs. This pace suits me well. I think to myself, I can do this. An hour later. After a warm shower and quickly returning some work emails, I give Seal a quick tour of our apartment. We live at 15 Central Park West on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. The building has been written and blogged about as a famous New York City building and has also been featured for its amazing views, architecture, and residence. Many of the world's top CEOs, athletes, and entertainers live in the building. I convinced Sarah 2 years ago we should move in because the building had a pool. We can swim every day, honey. Well, here we are 2 years later. We bought the apartment, but we have not been in the pool once. Although my wife and I don't consider ourselves to be fancy, the building sure is. In fact, when we first moved in, the elevator concierge, not the elevator operator, the elevator concierge, told me to get off the elevator because the elevators are only for residents. I guess I didn't look the part of resident in my ski hat and shorts. I start the tour by showing Seal how to use the remotes for the television. I figure that's something a guest who's staying with us for over a month will want to know, right? This is how you turn it on, I say, pointing to the power button. We won't be watching much TV, he says, interrupting me. Okay then, moving on, I say. I set the remote down and then lead him over to the kitchen. If we aren't going to be watching television, then we certainly will be eating, I assume. I pull out the first drawer. So this is where all the forks, spoons, and knives are, I say. I won't be using your utensils, he says. Huh? I close the drawer. Maybe I'll have more luck in the laundry room. As I'm about to show him how to use the washer and dryer, he interrupts me again and says, Yo, man, you can skip all this tour shit. Just tell me how to get to the gym. Okay, the tour is officially over, and we head to the gym. For the first time, I can see Seal's front teeth as a smile starts to form. He's ecstatic. I can see the change in his expression just from walking inside of the gym. It's almost like watching The Wizard of Oz for the first time when you see the screen go from black and white to color. It's a whole new world. He walks over to the pull-up bar, jumps up, grabs the bar, and hangs. He starts to swing and swing some more and swing until he finally jumps off. I guess he approves because his smile's grown. This is perfect. You ready? He asks. For what? Your pulls. You mean like right now? Give me 10, all the way down and all the way up. Let's see where your pull-up game is at. I jump up and grab the bar and pull my 200 pounds of body weight up until my chin is over the bar. 1. I go down. When I get to number 8, I start kicking my legs around frantically to try to get some momentum. I need to get my chin over this damn bar, but I can't. I drop to the floor. Seal tells me to take a 45-second break and do it again. 45 seconds later, I jump back up and grab the bar. I've never been good at doing pull-ups. In fact, I hate doing them. Somehow I manage to squeak out 6 more before I drop back to the ground. This time, I think for good. Seal tells me to take another 45 seconds and then do it again. Another 45 seconds go by, and this time I'm able to get 3 solid pull-ups in before I drop to the ground. Each time I'm dropping, my legs give out a little more. That's 17 pull-ups. I'm done. I'm literally maxed out. I don't think I've ever done 17 pull-ups so fast, or ever for that matter. I grab my left bicep with my right hand and my right bicep with my left hand and squeeze. It feels like there are nails in my biceps. 17. Cool. That's my max number. I didn't think I could even do that. Amazing. Let's head back upstairs. As I start to look up, Seal is staring at me with a blank expression. Deadpan. We're going to stay here until you do 100. What? I can't do 100. That's impossible, I say. You better find a way, he says to me, like a father might tell his son to clean his bedroom. You got a shitty-ass attitude. I do 1 and drop to the floor. I walk around the gym trying to delay the inevitable. My arms sag at my sides and Seal watches me. I can't procrastinate any longer. I return to the pull-up bar. I do another 1 and drop to the ground. I take another lap around the gym and I'm back to the pull-up bar. I drop, lap, pull-up, drop, lap, pull-up, drop. 90 minutes later, I'm on 97. Training is definitely underway. Workout totals, 6 miles and 100 pull-ups. No Novocaine. I like to sit back and enjoy the pain. I earned it. Seal. I grew up on Long Island in Roslyn, New York, with two older sisters and a brother. I was the youngest by 5 years. As suburban as you can get, Roslyn has developments of houses that are all pretty much the same, with connected backyards that were patrolled by an army of kids my age. My mom owned a cowbell. I could be 6 or 7 houses away, and I'd hear my mom's bell calling me home. I was trained like a cow. It was slightly embarrassing. The rule was, do your homework and you can go outside. But when you hear the bell, you better come home, and you better be home in 5 minutes. My mom was the most unconditionally loving mom, but my mom was also a hard ass. Nobody messed with her. I've never heard her curse, but she has this look that she'd give you, her go-to move, silence. It got me every time. My mom was also something of a dichotomy when it came to traditional child health care. On one hand, she let me eat cheeseburgers, bacon, ice cream, and Oreo cookies, whatever I wanted, and all at once. But she was freaked out by x-ray machines, fluoride, and Novocaine. She didn't think there had been enough research and testing done on certain things in the 1970s, and she didn't want me to be the lab rat. I got my first x-ray only after they invented the big lead vest they put on you, and she thought fluoride was just the most toxic thing. Not having x-rays and fluoride in my life was easy to take. What was hard was no Novocaine. My dentist's name was Henry Schmitzer, and his office was about a 45-minute drive from our house. I guess he was the only dentist my mom could find who would drill a kid's mouth without an anesthetic. Henry might have been Laurence Olivier's inspiration for the character he played in Marathon Man. So while all my friends were getting gassed up, pain-free, and lollipop visits to their dentist around the corner, I'd be sitting in the back of the car for 45 minutes staring out the window, sweating, thinking, we're actually driving out of our way for this shit? That sound and smell like burning bone of the drill. The anticipation was grueling, to say the least. It was a full-on event for me. The walk from the parking lot to the office always sparked thoughts and temptations to just run away as fast as I could. But my mother would give me a sympathetic smile as she held the door for me to go inside. She really believed she was doing the best for me. Inside, Schmitzer, the motherfucker, would start drilling my mouth. I'm literally holding my mouth as I'm reading this. The taste of that fire, the sound, the excruciating pain, and my mouth would be sore forever. It was crazy. You'd think that that would have been motivation to brush better, but it always seemed like I had at least one cavity every checkup. My dad was basically the complete opposite from my mom, in a go-with-the-flow type of way. He owned a plumbing supply store in Mineola and worked 6 days a week, a half day on Saturday. Even with all the time he invested at work, he was a hands-on dad. He showed up for every game, every event, and made it a point to be home for family dinner every night. At home, he was like a mad scientist. He had a workshop in his basement, and that was his spot. He wasn't into watching sports or hanging out with friends. He liked to invent. When the movie Back to the Future came out and Doc created the flux capacitor, I was like, that's my dad! I remember one time in elementary school when I had to make a diorama. The assignment was simple. Take a shoebox and create a replica of your own house. Well, by the time my dad helped out, my diorama had running water and electricity. I kid you not. You could also push a button and the little garage door on the diorama would open. I definitely think I got my creativity from my dad. And as far as I know, he was pro-Novocaine. But unfortunately, he wasn't the one driving me to the dentist. The part of me that would grow up to hire a Navy SEAL, that came from my mom. Day 2. Nature's Gatorade. I'm the surprisor, not the surprisee. SEAL. New York City to Boston. 20 degrees to 16 degrees. 0700. I had a hard time sleeping last night. It's a combination of nerves and excitement mixed in with the fact that my biceps are jacked up from the pull-ups. They're sore to the touch. I don't think they moved once from the 90-degree flex position they were stuck in all night. As far as nerves go, I'm unusually nervous right now. It's not the typical type of nerve someone might get from having to go on a job interview or something like that, but it's nervousness in the sense that I don't want to disappoint SEAL by not being able to do the workouts. This anxiety started to build before he ever arrived, and the thought of not wanting to get hurt is playing like background music in my head. It's a little like the nerves I feel before a marathon. There's a level of uncertainty of what will and might happen. Plus, the way SEAL expected me to do 100 pull-ups yesterday was borderline certifiable, and he refused to leave the gym until they were all done. It freaked me out. Anyway, before we went to bed last night, SEAL told me to set my alarm clock for 06:30, 6:30 a.m., in preparation for a run at 0700, 7 a.m., sharp. Well, there was no alarm clock needed because at 6 a.m., I hear someone walking around the foyer of the apartment. Not tiptoeing, but making what feels like intentional noise to wake me up. I hear an excessive loud fake coughing, the slamming of the front door, and music being turned up extra loud. What an asshole. I grab two sweatshirts, two hats, and gloves. SEAL is in the same summer attire as yesterday, with the addition of some old gloves I lent him. We head out. As we walk by the front desk, I can tell the doormen are curious as to who SEAL is. I thought I overheard one of them asking the other if he was Jerry Rice, the football great. Nah, this guy's way bigger than Jerry Rice, the other said. We run the same loop of Central Park as we did yesterday at the same 9-minute mile pace. There's no talking. There's no joking. There's no communication. I'm not so sure this guy wants to be my friend. And I'm not so sure now I want to be his. My arms hurt like hell from the pull-ups, but I don't say anything. I just keep stride. I've run long distances in my life, but when I'm not training on a daily basis, a 6-mile run's a pain in the ass. It's long and definitely can be boring. No matter how you slice it, 6 miles is going to take me 50 to 60 minutes. That's a long time to be running. Any runner will tell you that some days a run can fly by and be enjoyable, and sometimes that same exact run on the same exact path feels like torture and is excruciatingly slow. Today, the clock seems to be ticking particularly slowly. Maybe it's the awkwardness of running with a stranger. It's very odd running with someone you don't know and who doesn't speak. The silence is very uncomfortable. It's like running with someone who speaks a language you don't understand, except this someone is very intimidating and will be living with you for another 30 days. Whatever it is, this run feels twice as long as it did the last time I ran it. When we get home, I make a quick shake, shower, and head to work. 3 hours later. I haven't told SEAL that today I have to fly to Boston for a business meeting around noon, but I have good reason for the trip. I recently started a company called the 100 Mile Group. I'm fairly good at identifying trends and predicting the next big thing. The 100 Mile Group is set up to take advantage of that. If I find a product or service that I know customers will want and I have authentic passion for it, then our company will invest, market, or launch it. Our first product is a new brand called Zico Coconut Water. As a runner, I'm well aware of the amazing hydrating qualities of coconut water, and I'm convinced the category is going to take off. I'd also noticed that every 4 years or so, a new natural health drink would hit the market and explode off the shelves. Pomegranate juice had just stormed the castle. Everywhere you looked, there was an ad for the stuff. I believe coconut water was next. Initially, I looked into importing coconut water from overseas and having a go at it myself. After trips to Jamaica and Brazil, I quickly realized I'd be much better off partnering with an existing brand and helping them grow their business. I was introduced to Mark Rampola, the founder of Zico Coconut Water, that summer. Zico was a small company at the time with about $5 million in sales, but my spidey senses told me they were onto something. Plus, I really liked Mark. I ended up partnering with the company and simultaneously brokered a deal with Coca-Cola, where they came in as a minority partner. Coca-Cola had recently established a division called VEB, Venturing and Emerging Brands. This is the branch of Coke that looks for the next billion-dollar brand and partners with them during their early growth period. They were responsible for acquiring Honest Tea, Illy Coffee, and other hot brands. My friend Lance Collins had founded Fuse and just sold it to Coke. He introduced me to the president of the division, and after several trips to Atlanta, we formed a 3-way partnership, Zico, the 100 Mile Group, and Coca-Cola. Coke retained an option to acquire the whole company based on certain sales triggers. Zico's starting to take off, so this is a big meeting for me. I eventually tell SEAL we have to go to Boston for the meeting. I totally forgot to give him a heads up, but I'm sure he'll understand. It's business. This is some bullshit, Jesse. I'm gonna do it, but this is some pure cow bullshit. No more motherfucking surprises, Jesse. I'm the surprisor, not the surprisee. I'm not playing. No more fucking surprises. We can't deviate. He's livid. I promise we'll be back by 7 p.m. tonight to train, I say, hoping to smooth over his disappointment. He agrees, but in my mind I'm thinking, what real choice does he have? I have to work, right? It's noon. We go straight to the airport from my office. There's no need to stop by my apartment and pack because I'm positive we'll be back in time for our evening workout. I have an extra pair of shorts and t-shirt under my desk at work, so I grab them, just in case. The fact that I'm going to be meeting with Boston Celtic and basketball legend Kevin Garnett does very little to impress Seal. This is my first time meeting Garnett, and I'm looking forward to it. I've been good friends with his sports agent for a while, and I'd heard Garnett was a fan of Zico, even though he's officially an endorser of Gatorade. And Garnett is a fitness freak. In the off-season, Garnett lives in Malibu. But Garnett does not technically have an off-season, because as soon as the season ends, he gets right to training. He prides himself on working out early and often. I like my feet to be the first footprints in the sand, he said many times. I love the guy's intensity and focus on wellness. I think he'll be the perfect fit as an investor and endorser for Zico. Plus, it would be huge for us to lure him away from Gatorade, and I believe his contract with them is coming up for renewal. Needless to say, I'm excited for this meeting. On the jet, I buckle my seatbelt as tight as I can and point the air valve directly at me. Then I pull the shade down over the window. I've never been the greatest flyer, which is ironic because I started a private jet company. As part of my superstition, I go through a kind of pre-flight checklist every time I get on a plane. I say a prayer, put on Carole King, and click my heels 3 times. And this time, I'm glad I do. To say the takeoff is bumpy doesn't capture the experience. It's a nauseating roller coaster. The plane's being tossed around like a pinball from side to side. In between the free falls, I glance over at Seal. He's still in the same running shorts and t-shirt he ran in this AM, and he's reading Sports Illustrated. I'm not even sure Seal realizes we even took off yet, as he casually flips the pages of his magazine. He's unfazed. 20 minutes into the flight, a beeping noise chimes, indicating a warning, and the buckle your seatbelt light illuminates. The pilot instructs the flight attendants to return to their seats and stop service, as the turbulence is so severe. I'm flipped out and have convinced myself we're going down. Beads of sweat are pouring down my forehead, and my palms are drenched. But Seal? He doesn't so much as flinch. He's just reading, casually flipping the pages, and yawning. Finally, we're wheels down in Boston. I'm ecstatic we're on the ground in one piece. Seal couldn't give 2 shits. He turns to me and says, "Great flight." 1600. We walk into the conference room of the Boston Celtics practice facility, and there's Kevin Garnett, his agent, and one of his financial guys. Kevin's much taller than I anticipated, and he's super ripped. The guy looks way more muscular and intimidating in person. He just finished a 3-hour practice and was showered up and ready to discuss business. We're led to a large room that overlooks the court where the team's executives sit when they watch practice. I'm feeling pretty good. I enjoy putting people and products that I believe in together, and I'm quite at ease in this kind of meeting. So going in, my confidence level's on high. "Hey, Kevin, man, Jesse Itzler." I go to shake Garnett's hand, which is the size of a hamburger helper's hand, but I realize he's not looking at me. He's looking at Seal. "And this is Seal," I say. Seal nods, then Garnett does. It's like a silent standoff. 2 gunslingers in the Wild West evaluating each other. "I hired a Navy SEAL to live with me for a month or so," I say to explain. "You know, to train me. To shake some shit up in my life." Garnett's eyebrows arch, as if I'm the first person to bring a Navy SEAL to a business meeting with him. "Is it okay if he joins us for the meeting?" I hand Garnett a Zico coconut water, smile, and jump right into my pitch. If Mother Nature went into the sports drink business, Zico would be her Gatorade. "How many miles do you run a day?" Garnett asks Seal, finally breaking the silence that's been building between them. "Depends," Seal says with a shrug. "Do weights or resistance training?" "Yes and no," Seal says. "Anaerobic threshold? Body composition? Maximum heart rate? Your VO2? Garnett fires the questions and Seal parries them back. It's not a gunfight. It's more like Garnett's in the quarterfinals at the U.S. Open in Flushing, Queens, and Seal's playing badminton at a cookout. Hours pass. Not once do we talk about Zico. I'm just sitting there. We talk about workouts, or rather, they talk about workouts. I can tell that Seal's digging Garnett. There's some kind of mutual warrior vibe going on that they are connecting with. I'm picking it up too, but I'm not on the same warrior vibe radio station as them. Weather starts to roll in. The meeting goes on and on and on. "Aye," Garnett finally says, signaling the meeting's over. "What about Zico?" I'm wondering. Garnett and Seal turn and look at me like I've just magically reappeared. They give each other a bear hug, and we say our goodbyes. Finally, Garnett turns to me. "It's as simple as this, yo. Whatever you motherfuckers do," Garnett says, "I want in." 2000. I give Seal a high fist bump as we walk out of the building. The euphoria quickly turns into fear as we walk out into a full-fledged snow squall. This isn't good, I think to myself. This is what Seal might refer to as a surprise, but this one's on Mother Nature, not me. We don't even attempt to go to the airport, and I find us a hotel near the Boston Garden. It's getting late as we check into our rooms. I'm tired and need to rest. Maybe I'll rent a movie and order room service. Just as I lie down on the bed, I hear a knock. "Let's go," the voice says through the door. "Meet me in the lobby in 10 minutes. But it's freezing and snowing. 10 minutes. But we already ran this morning. 10 minutes. But I don't have anything warm. 8 minutes later, I get off the elevator in the lobby. Seal is ready. He's waiting at the front desk. He looks at me like I'm late, when in actuality, I'm 2 minutes early. It's our second run of the day, and the temperature keeps dropping. I'm in shorts, a t-shirt, a hat, and the sweatshirt I wore to the meeting. That's it. It's 18 degrees outside, and we run along the Boston waterfront. It's bitter cold, windy, and it has a misty snow. I really don't want to be out here, but I have no choice. I'm freezing my ass off. I want to be in my hotel room, ordering room service and watching the snow from behind my window. Plus, all I really want to do is think about the next step with Zico and Garnett while it's fresh in my mind. I try to break down the Garnett meeting with Seal and discuss the win. "That meeting was awesome," I say. No response. "You think his financial guy dug it?" No response. "What did you think of his financial guy anyway?" No response. About 1 minute later, Seal finally says, "Motherfucker, it's KG's show." I'll leave it at that. I'm not sure exactly what body of water we're running next to this evening, but I assume it's the Charles River. I have nothing to base that off of other than the fact that that's the only river I know in Boston. Whether I'm right or wrong, I visualize the river filled with college kids rowing on a hot day. I'm not sure Seal is visualizing anything. He's just staring straight ahead as if he's anticipating an ambush. But no enemies appear. When we get back to the hotel, my fingertips are frozen. I go to Google Frostbite on my laptop, but I can't even work the keypad. We just logged 6 more miles. That's 12 for the day and 18 so far. I throw my wet clothes in the bathtub, lay my sweatshirt out on the heater in the room to dry, and call Sarah to check in. Whenever I'm on the road, it's tough being away from my wife and son, but a call always warms me up. It's 9:30 p.m. real time, and she's not picking up. It just keeps ringing. Sarah likes to go to bed early. It's been like that since the day I met her in 2006 at a poker tournament in Las Vegas. Sarah was a customer of mine at Marquis Jet, the private jet company I co-founded in 2001. Our partner, NetJets, was hosting a poker tournament, and we were allocated only 40 seats at the tables. We had 3,000-plus customers at that point, and picking 40 was very hard to do. Every sales rep got to submit a list of 4 or 5 clients they thought were worthy of being invited, and then my partner Kenny and I would choose one person from each region to invite. My Georgia sales rep called me up and said she had a young businesswoman who she thought should get a ticket. The rep then emailed me a photo of her. The picture was a headshot of a pretty blonde with an apple on her head. What? I was intrigued. She was a cutie. So I told the rep not to send any other applications my way and go ahead and invite her, the girl with the apple on her head. The night of the tournament, about 15 of us went out to dinner, and the woman with the apple on her head was in the group. Then, 30 minutes into the dinner, she said it was past her bedtime and was going back to her room. I looked at my phone. It was 9:30 p.m. Who goes to bed at 9:30 at night in Vegas? What an odd bird, I thought. 2 years later, I was married to that odd bird. My call goes into voicemail and I leave a message. Since it's past 9 p.m., Sarah must be sound asleep, and it's time for me to call it a night, too. With all the weather delays, I assume the airport will be backed up, and I want to get there early in the morning. Workout totals, 12 miles and freezing rain. Day 3, my nuts. You need to feel the pace. Seal. Boston, 28 degrees, 0500. The hotel phone is ringing. What time is it? I didn't request a wake-up call. Obviously, it's Seal, so I roll over in bed and pick it up. It's go time, is the first thing I hear. Yesterday, Seal told me he wanted me to run 6 miles in the morning and 3 miles at night for the first 3 days he's here to build my base. 3 days to build a base? That sounds ridiculous. Doesn't it take months to build a base? Anyway, I wasn't expecting to be in Boston overnight, so I have no extra clothes to change into. Plus, my clothing from last night is still soaking wet and cold from the snow and sweat. Before we head down, I meet Seal in the hallway between our rooms to discuss a little issue I have. Seal, I have a problem, I say to him. I didn't bring any extra underwear. So what? I can't run without underwear. Nah, bro, you can't run without legs. It's on. So I throw on my freezing wet clothes from last night. I'm cold and miserable before I even head out. My underwear is so wet that I can't put it on, so I go commando style. We meet in the lobby. Today's pace is faster than last night's, like a minute per mile faster. And somebody forgot to give the sun a wake-up call because it's still pitch black out. We dart in and out of the headlights of incoming traffic like inmates fleeing the yard in a prison break. We zig, horns beep. We zag, horns blast. I'm just trying to keep pace. Apparently, Seal prefers to run on the street facing traffic and as close to the moving cars as possible. Like, why not run on the sidewalk? Why are we on the street? The answer is, I'm not really sure why. Maybe he likes the adrenaline rush. I don't. I prefer to run on a quiet street where there's no exhaust and cars aren't coming within an inch of killing me. Whatever the reason, he insists on running that way. There's a sidewalk 2 feet from us that we can easily jump on. It may even be 4 runners. It's clean, empty, safe, and appealing. Seal ignores it. We stay on the street, narrowly avoiding cars and jumping over potholes. It's driving me crazy. Why can't he go on the sidewalk? After 20 minutes or so, Seal has only said 2 words to me. Stay close. At about 3 miles into our 6-mile run, it's time to turn around to run back to the hotel. So we do. The sun begins to peek through. It's 5:30 a.m. I'm getting better at dodging traffic, but I still don't like it. It's on the route home when I begin to realize something isn't quite right. It's my nuts. They're starting to rub against the fabric of my shorts because I'm running without underwear. It's not a pleasurable feeling. Without breaking stride, I put my right hand on my balls, pull my fingers out of my shorts, and look. Blood. Confirmed. It's my nuts. My balls are bleeding from the friction. Jesus. Seal, my nuts are bleeding. Who gives a fuck about your tiny nuts, he says. We keep pace. About a mile later, I realize I don't recognize anything. The buildings, the trees, nothing on the way back to the hotel looks familiar. This is not the way we came. Sorry, man. Nothing looks familiar. I assume it's impossible that you could get lost, I managed to ask in between gasps. Not with your training. He glares at me. Ranger school, bro. No chance. After 48 minutes of running, his watch beeps for the 6th time, indicating we've hit the 6-mile mark, but no hotel in sight. I'm thinking 3 miles out, 3 miles back. Run should be over, right? Come on, man. My nuts are fucking bloody. At 8.3 miles, we finally find the hotel. I'm pissed off about the extra mileage. Seal satisfied. It's like he thinks he got extra credit or something. The second we get inside, Seal pulls out his training log and jots down a recap of the workout. Date, time, pace, mileage, etc. He writes so small he has the details of his whole year of workouts on 2 pages. I walk bow-legged across the lobby. It hurts. I wonder if the concierge can help with bleeding nuts. Ranger school, bro. 3 hours later. I call Seal's room and tell him we better get to the airport. Roger that, he says. It's 9 a.m. We're stuck for hours at Logan. Nothing's flying. I make some calls. I'm happy thinking over the way the Garnett meeting went down. I read some magazines. I walk around. I make some more calls. Seal just sits there, staring straight ahead. He doesn't move off the chair. He doesn't go to the bathroom. I'm not even sure he blinks. He's just staring. I look over in the direction of what he's staring at to identify it. I follow his eyes to a blank brick wall. There's nothing there. I look back at him to double-check I'm lining up his sight line correctly. And again, it takes me to the brick wall. He's just staring. Like the stone lion in front of the New York Public Library. Seal is 2 gears, idle and full out. But his idle isn't like normal idle at all. It's more like the moment between ignition and blastoff. I get the feeling around him that things get hairy quickly. And yet, I also have a feeling of absolute safety around him. I don't mean my own personal safety, though there's that too. I mean like national defense safety. For 3 more hours, I pace, eat, shop, and read. Seal just stares. We finally board our flight. Still day 3, that night. Thankfully, the flight is much smoother than the ride to Boston. I'm able to close my eyes for the 50 minutes to New York, and it feels like I'm in full REM cycle. I'm out cold. We land at LaGuardia and jump in a cab back to the city. It's a short 30-minute ride to the west side. It's almost 8 p.m. by the time we get back to the apartment. Seal throws a banana at me and says, "Fuel up." I've only eaten airport food all day, and I'm starving. I'd love to order in Josie's, a local health food restaurant, but that's not on Seal's menu. His specials tonight are tossed bananas and running miles. "Let's knock these 3 little miles out," he says. 6 in the a.m. and 3 miles at night," he repeats. "We need to build this foundation." Maybe I'm calculating wrong, but we did 8.3 miles this a.m. If we round up, we're done for the day. I'm not 100% sure why Seal agreed to come work with me. As eager as I was to shake up my life, I bet in some way he was equally curious to see how I lived, to learn, to get some ideas about business, travel, family, and life after the military. I'm not really sure. It's too early in our relationship, but I make a mental note to ask him down the road. Winter in New York City can be very cold, and tonight the big CNN video screen that's displayed across from my apartment says 17 degrees. Seal puts on the same outfit he's had on for the past 5 runs. I mean, the exact same outfit. How did all this shit dry? I go into my room.